You see, Dr. Seabell Society. It only came because we had three geckos. The father, the monster. We let the moon get it. But now, all we have to do is make a Bloodshed Society.
Deep into history. Deep into history. That's a podcast, Deep into History, a good podcast. It's also a Twitter account, at Deep into History. So go follow them. You know, I can never get enough history content, nor should I. There's a lot of history to know, and it's kind of stupid to refuse to know about history. It's such a wonderful prime example of my assertion that humanity has a superpower called sharing. As far as I know, we're the only animal that can share what we learn with future generations and get shared with by dead members of our species, like, you know, intentionally, anyway. It's really why leftism is the only ism that I get down with. It exploits humanity's superpower, working together, combining brains, not competing with each other, cooperating with each other. Of course, MLK did say a smart thing once about the idea of pitting individualism against collectivism. Of course, you know, MLK had a super smart, enlightened thing to say about everything. What a king. Oh, that's why they call him that.
Oh, I stayed up all night Christmas Eve to get this out on Christmas Day. So Merry Christmas, everybody. User Ray Bradbury essay I read about 20 minutes into this episode to inspire you to create amazing things in 2022.
R.I.P. to a real one. Anyway, Martin Luther King once said, "What I'm saying to you this morning is that communism forgets that life is individual, capitalism forgets that life is social, and the kingdom of brotherhood is found neither in the thesis of communism nor in the antithesis of capitalism, but in a higher synthesis. It is found in a synthesis that combines the truths of both." I made a cool poster out of that quote and printed it with the school I teach at's awesome poster printer and laminated it with the school's laminating machine. Don't tell them I did that. They let us do that, but I've really been kind of taking advantage of it. But it now hangs in my room along with a Tom T. Hall quote, a Cornel West quote, and a Eugene Debs quote. I believe I think this one from Tom T. Hall is appropriate since I'm teaching high school, is young kids today are doing the same things I did, but they're doing them differently. They don't do brain surgery the way they used to do it either. The Cornel West one is, I can't remember exactly what it is. It's something like profound music is really profound. You can look it up. It's good. Cornel West quote about music. And then the Eugene Debs one, I should have that memorized because I recorded a thing of it that is on my YouTube channel. It's, "While there is a lower class, I am in it. While there is a criminal element, I am of it. And as long as there is a soul in prison, I am not free." Go check out that video, that Eugene Debs video that I made, his statement to the court. It's about 10 minutes long on my YouTube channel, Hoss Bossman YouTube channel. And it's really good. It's like if I could just, people ask me what my political beliefs are and why I believe them, I would just point them toward that video. But nobody ever asked me that, so I don't ever get a chance to do that, except right now, with you. This is a Bread Sheet Baby-sode.
My name is Hoss Bossman, and you're listening to Bread Sheet.
I'm just gonna come clean right up top here, though. It's just a mini-sode, really. I just wanted to use the word baby-sode, which I'm fairly certain is a Haas original. Y'all, I got some brain thoughts. Too many swimming around in the old Haas head. So maybe I need to focus a bit. I really hate how it feels like we're in a political limbo sort of right now, but that's really never true. Politics always impacts our lives. Hell, impact is probably too weak a word. Politics is everything. It undergirds our day-to-day lives, ideally in a positive way, but I get why everyone is so sick of talking politics all the time at the end of Trump's first presidency. It was really fucking exhausting. And now we're talking about actual policy and getting resources to the people who need them most. And it's not as horrifying to watch, so it's, I guess, not as interesting. And, you know, a cartoonishly corrupt senator named Joe Manchin is just diarrheaing all over the carpet, then just leaving it there and going, no, I didn't do it, when we try to tell him to clean it up. That is not a good analogy. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. It was a gross analogy, and it just really wasn't that good a one. It didn't really add up to much. Joe Manchin sucks. Kind of that analogy was just a little too transparent that I was trying to shoehorn the D word in there. Sorry, Greg. In any case, Joe Manchin's a diarrhea-faced poop monster, and I hope being a Democratic senator who takes more money from the coal and gas industry than any single Republican has been a fun career for him, at least. I don't know. Why do these greedy weirdos go into politics to get rich? I don't understand it. Seems like you get more return on investment and maybe can have more actual power just sticking to the private sector. I mean, that's basically what it's for, right? Capitalism favors the rich. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Why don't you just skip right to the being rich part? Why do you have to, like, be a corrupt politician as well? I guess they like having power or whatever. But, man, this planet is, like, really screwed. Well, not the planet itself, as George Carlin would say. One of the best 10 minutes of stand-up ever, that the planet is fine. Look it up on YouTube. I'm sure it's there. Yeah, the planet itself is fine. But just a good chunk of the life on it is not gonna be fine. But 2021 year is drawing to a close, and what a year it's been. Is this show keeping up with the times? I know I'm not getting it out as often because I'm, you know, teaching little children's how to read good. But let me ask you something. Is old Haas losing a bit of the magic he had back when it was just me, a 2015 MacBook, a one input USB interface, and $100 handheld stage mic? I've hit the big time now, and I have 4 patrons, a 2016 MacBook, and a 2-input USB interface. I'm no longer living in my girlfriend's parents' basement. Hell, I've even got a job now, but things are going okay, but it's made me slack on the podcast, and I sincerely apologize for that. But here I am doing it here over the break, even though I have an insane amount of work that I got to get done before the end of this break. Some break, huh? But hey, I haven't needed to sell my blood in quite some time because of this job. Longest stretch since college, probably. I'm just giving it away willy-vanilly these days, which is good because they need blood down here. Anywho, I think I've let things get stale around here in the Breadsheet headquarters. The show's gone from being kind of ironically self-indulgent to maybe actually really self-indulgent in an annoying way, so I need to do something to curb that right now. I'm come up with it right now. A new segment, Haas's top. No, I've already done Haas's top 5. And I said the problem was being too self-indulgent, so I'm going to do another list of things I like. How can I do a new segment right now that's not self-indulgent while I'm sitting here in a room alone recording into a microphone here? It's quite the pickle. How about this? I'll read you something. Something that someone else wrote. The thing I mentioned earlier, I did this a while back when I read Eugene Debs' statement to the court from 1918, I believe. That's on YouTube, on the Haas Bossman YouTube channel. Go check that out. It's called How to Fix Society. It's a great little 10-minute quote. Best explanation for, like, you know, labor politics and leftism and like best kind of justification, very impassioned, poetic, beautiful. It really gets down to the real reason why we do what we do, why we believe what we believe over here on in the compassionosphere, the compassiosphere. How about this? I'm planning to have my kids read Fahrenheit 451 this semester, and don't worry, I'm not gonna like put an audiobook of Fahrenheit 451 up, though. I mean, that might be fun. There's a good one, I think. I've used it with students before, but anyway, hopefully I'm gonna use that as a companion piece to Will Eisner's The Plot. I ordered a class set of The Plot accidentally. It's a great comic. Will Eisner is a great comic artist. It's about the protocols of the Elders of Zion. It's a piece of propaganda made by the Russian Secret Service, claiming that, you know, the Jews are trying to take over the world and stuff. And a lot of anti-Semitism over the past like 120, 130 years has been based on it. And I wanted my students to read it because they learn a lot about certain types of civil rights stuff and oppression and propaganda and stuff like that. But, you know, stuff that we learn about here in America. But that's one thing that I had never known about until I started listening to Knowledge Fight. And hey, I don't want to jinx it, but I'm going to try to get Dan on the show. I got Jordan. He's like way back there. I think episodes 5 and 7 were Jordan Holmes's episodes. If you don't listen to Knowledge Fight, you definitely should. Even if you don't care about Alex Jones. I know it seems weird to listen to a podcast about Alex Jones if you don't care about him. But I promise you, it is well worth it. Alex Jones sucks and he is boring. I don't really care about him anymore. It's just the two dudes, Dan and Jordan, have some of the best chemistry of any like comedic duo I've ever heard. Like, you owe it to yourself. Check that show out. The most recent episode, I believe, is about Project Camelot, which is when they go off book and start talking about stuff other than Alex Jones. That's my favorite thing that they do on Knowledge Fight. Go check that out. Like talking about space weirdos, as they call it. I think eventually, if Alex Jones stops doing stuff, they'll, you know, switch over to doing something else. But I really hope they stay as a duo, because they're just like perfect dynamic together. Go back and listen to that episode of Richie, where I interviewed Jordan Holmes. I think it was 2 episodes, 5 and 7, about a novel that he wrote, self-published, that was really good. Also, hope, fingers crossed, maybe I can get Dan on the show soon. Seems like a nice dude, and I've got just so much stuff I want to ask him about, as you know, he's like the main kind of researcher on their show. Anyhoot, let's see. What was I saying? Oh yeah, Fahrenheit 451. Oh man, I've got some ideas for how I'm going to teach that and how I'm going to like make it a unit about critical thinking and like questioning what you read and all this kind of stuff. I think it's going to be good. I made some copies of the first essay in Ray Bradbury's fantastic book, Zen and the Art of Writing, for the kids to read. I kind of wanted to do it as a primer before we read the book. You should read that, by the way, Zen and the Art of Writing, or at least this essay. Well, actually, you don't have to read this essay, because I think this is the thing that I'm going to read to you here in a minute. I'm going to do that. Give it a listen here. It's a little outside the scope of what I usually do on this podcast, which is, well, I guess that's kind of become signature of the show. Just kind of having whatever old Haas likes on it, I guess. This essay is awesome. If you're a creative person or want to be more creative or think creativity is interesting at all, or artistry is interesting at all, I think you'll enjoy this. I mean, hell, if you are or ever have been into books in any way or stories. I mean, most people are into stories. If you just really like movies or TV shows, I think there's something for you here in this brief essay. I think that when I have my students read this, I'm going to have them write something about like what they're passionate about. I think a good first step might be like, okay, this essay is about writing, obviously, and y'all are about to hear it, but I want you to try and engage with it like this. Before you read the essay, write down some of your favorite things to do, like in a list, and like try to do what I do when I read this. Like, this essay is about writing, which is a love of mine, but as I've always said, I'm more of a poem head than a novel freak. I've tried writing novels, and I've got one that I do think I am eventually going to finish. It's, I think, a decent idea for a book, and I've made some headway in it. Haven't picked it up in a while, but I will finish it eventually. But yeah, I've successfully finished a few short stories too. I've published one or two in, you know, small university magazines and stuff way back in the day when I was in college. But the ones that turn out the best are more like prose poetry than anything else, in my opinion. Just more of a poem guy, I guess. More of a poeticness. It's just, I love it and have fun with it. And writing a good story is just a little too linear of an exercise, I guess, for my jumbled mess of a brain. My main joy has always come from writing songs, actually. That does give the poeticness a little bit of structure, but even though this essay I'm going to read you is about writing fiction, a good bit of it is relevant to pretty much any kind of like creative endeavor that you can think of. And it's really probably best to think of it as an essay about like passion in general, like being passionate about anything. So before the kids read the essay, I think I'm going to have them decide on something they love and try to think about how the stuff Bradbury says about writing could apply to their thing. And that could all lead into a, like, the joy of blank writing assignment, or maybe some kind of presentation or project or something like that. That's actually a pretty good idea. I should definitely do this. Yeah, so try that. Thinking about how what he says in this essay could apply to something you love. Like, you know, writing, playing music, drawing, maybe even video games, watching people play video games, watching movies, playing a sport, dancing, cooking, gardening. Hell, if you're a big nerd, maybe like collecting Star Wars action figures or doing math problems or reading about trains or watching TikTok or YouTube videos or making god darn spreadsheets. I could still use your help, by the way, if you can make spreadsheets and making a spreadsheet. But, you know, whatever brings you joy in this sick, sad world, I'll bet you can find at least a few ways to apply Bradbury's passion and gusto to your thing. And now that I think of it, that's probably a generally good way to try and engage with what you're reading in general. Like, ask yourself how you could apply the analysis or thoughts or logic or framework or whatever it is to what you're reading to yourself, like your own life, or at least something you're familiar with and that you give a damn about. All right, I am off the rails, but look at y'all getting me all excited about a teaching idea. We make a really good team. Hoss Bossman and the Sheetheads. All right, with no further ado, please enjoy my rendition of Ray Bradbury's The Joy of Writing. And I guess I'm going to make a song to do this special edition of Hoss Recites. Joy of Writing by Ray Bradbury. Zest. Gusto. How rarely one hears these words used. How rarely do we see people living, or for that matter, creating by them. Yet if I were asked to name the most important items in a writer's makeup, the things that shape his material and rush him along the road to where he wants to go, I could only warn him to look to his zest, see to his gusto. You have your list of favorite writers, I have mine. Dickens, Twain, Wolfe, Peacock, Shaw, Moliere, Johnson, Wycherley, Sam Johnson. Poets, Gerard Manley Hopkins, Dylan Thomas, Pope. Painters, El Greco, Tintoretto. Musicians, Mozart, Haydn, Ravel, Johann Strauss. Think of all these names and you think of, big or little, but nonetheless important, zests, appetites, hungers. Think of Shakespeare and Melville and you think of thunder, lightning, wind. They all knew the joy of creating in large or small forms, on unlimited or restricted canvases. No matter if creation came hard here and there along the way, or what illnesses and tragedies touched their most private lives, the important things are those passed down to us from their hands and minds, and these are full to bursting with animal vigor and intellectual vitality. Their hatreds and despairs were reported with a kind of love. Look at El Greco's elongation and tell me, if you can, that he had no joy in his work. Can you really pretend that Tintoretto's God Creating the Animals of the Universe is a work founded on anything less than fun in its widest and most completely involved sense? The best jazz says, gonna live forever, don't believe in death. The best sculpture, like the head of Nefertiti, says again and again, the beautiful one was here, is here, and will be here forever. Each of the men I have listed seized a bit of the quicksilver of life, froze it for all time, and turned, in the blaze of their creativity, to point at it and cry, isn't this good? And it was good. What has all this to do with writing the short story in our times? Only this. If you are writing without zest, without gusto, without love, without fun, you are only half a writer. It means you are so busy keeping one eye on the commercial market or one ear peeled for the avant-garde coterie that you are not being yourself. You don't even know yourself. For the first thing a writer should be is excited. He should be a thing of fevers and enthusiasms. Without such vigor, he might as well be out picking peaches or digging ditches. God knows it'd be better for his health. How long has it been since you wrote a story where your real love or your real hatred somehow got onto the paper? When was the last time you dared release a cherished prejudice so it slammed the page like a lightning bolt? What are the best things and the worst things in your life, and when are you going to get around to whispering or shouting them? Wouldn't it be wonderful, for instance, to throw down a copy of Harper's Bazaar you happen to be leafing through at the dentist's and leap to your typewriter and ride off with hilarious anger, attacking their silly and sometimes shocking snobbishness? Years ago, I did just that. I came across an issue where the bizarre photographers, with their perverted sense of equality, once again utilized natives in a Puerto Rican backstreet as props in front of which their starved-looking mannequins postured for the benefit of yet more emaciated half-women in the best salons in the country. The photograph so enraged me that I ran, did not walk, to my machine and wrote Sun and Shadow, the story of an old Puerto Rican who ruins the bizarre photographer's afternoon by sneaking into each picture and dropping his pants. I dare say there are a few of you who would like to have done this job. I had the fun of doing it. The cleansing after effects of the hoot, the holler, and the great horse laugh. Probably the editors at the Bazaar never heard. But a lot of readers did and cried, go it, Bazaar, go it, Bradbury. I claim no victory, but there was blood on my gloves when I hung them up. When was the last time you did a story like that, out of pure indignation? When was the last time you were stopped by the police in your neighborhood because you like to walk and perhaps think at night? It happened to me just often enough that, irritated, I wrote The Pedestrian, a story of a time 50 years from now when a man is arrested and taken off for clinical study because he insists on looking at untelevised reality and breathing unair-conditioned air. Irritations and angers aside, what about loves? What do you love most in the world? The big and little things, I mean. A trolley car, a pair of tennis shoes. These, at one time when we were children, were invested with magic for us. During the past year, I published one story about a boy's last ride in a trolley that smells of all the thunderstorms in time, full of cool, green, moss velvet seats and blue electricity, but doomed to be replaced by the more prosaic, more practical-smelling bus. Another story concerned a boy who wanted to own a pair of new tennis shoes for the power they gave him to leap rivers and houses and streets and even bushes, sidewalks, and dogs. The shoes were, to him, the surge of antelope and gazelle on African summer veldt. The energy of unleashed rivers and summer storms lay in the shoes. He had to have them more than anything else in the world. So, simply then, here is my formula. What do you want more than anything else in the world? What do you love, or what do you hate? Find a character, like yourself, who will want something or not want something with all his heart. Give him running orders. Shoot him off. Then follow as fast as you can go. The character, in his great love or hate, will rush you through to the end of the story. The zest and gusto of his need, and there is zest in hate as well as in love, will fire the landscape and raise the temperature of your typewriter 30 degrees. All of this is primarily directed to the writer who has already learned his trade. That is, has put into himself enough grammatical tools and literary knowledge so he won't trip himself up when he wants to run. The advice holds good for the beginner too, however, even though his steps may falter for purely technical reasons. Even here, passion often saves the day. The history of each story, then, should read almost like a weather report. Hot today, cool tomorrow. This afternoon, burn down the house. Tomorrow, pour cold, critical water upon the simmering coals. Time enough to think and cut and rewrite tomorrow. But today, explode. Fly apart. Disintegrate. The other 6 or 7 drafts are going to be pure torture. So why not enjoy the first draft in the hope that your joy will seek and find others in the world who, reading your story, will catch fire too. It doesn't have to be a big fire, a small blaze, candlelight perhaps, a longing for a mechanical wonder like a trolley or an animal wonder like a pair of sneakers rabbiting the lawns of early morning. Look for the little loves, find and shape the little bitternesses, savor them in your mouth, try them on your typewriter. When did you last read a book of poetry or take time of an afternoon for an essay or two? Have you ever read a single issue of Geriatrics, the official journal of the American Geriatric Society, a magazine devoted to research and clinical study of the diseases and processes of the aged and aging? Or read, or even seen, a copy of What's New, a magazine published by the Abbott Laboratories in North Chicago, containing articles such as Tubocurarine for cesarean section, or Finerone in epilepsy, but also utilizing poems by William Carlos Williams, Archibald MacLeish, stories by Clifton Fadiman and Leo Rosten, covers and interior illustrations by John Groth, Aaron Bobrod, William Sharp, Russell Cowles. Absurd? Perhaps. But ideas lie everywhere, like apples fallen and melting in the grass for lack of wayfaring strangers with an eye and a tongue for beauty, whether absurd, horrific, or genteel. Gerard Manley Hopkins put it this way. Glory be to God for dappled things, for skies of couple color as a brinded cow, for rose moles all in stipple upon trout that swim, fresh fire coal, chestnut falls, finches wings, landscape plotted and pieced, fold, fallow, and plow, and all trades, their gear and tackle and trim, all things counter, original, spare, strange, whatever is fickle, freckled, who knows how, with swift, slow, sweet, sour, a dazzle, dim, he fathers forth whose beauty is past change. Praise him. Thomas Wolfe ate the world and vomited lava. Dickens dined at a different table every hour of his life. Molière, tasting society, turned to pick up his scalpel, as did Pope and Shaw. Everywhere you look in the literary cosmos, the great ones are busy loving and hating. Have you given up this primary business as obsolete in your own writing? What fun you are missing, then. The fun of anger and dissolution, the fun of loving and being loved, of moving and being moved by this masked ball which dances us from cradle to churchyard. Life is short, misery sure, mortality certain. But on the way, in your work, why not carry those 2 inflated pig bladders labeled zest and gusto? With them, traveling to the grave, I intend to slap some dummocks behind, pat a pretty girl's coiffure, wave to a tad of a persimmon tree. Anyone wants to join me? There's plenty of room in Coxey's army. Ray Bradbury in 1973. The Joy of Writing is what that was called. Well, that sure was something, wasn't it? Doesn't it make you want to just go out and create something? You know what? On that note, why don't you get out there and make something awesome? I know I talked a little politics in the beginning of this episode here, but, you know, we'll talk about making a bread sheet more next year and fixing society and all that stuff. For now, I hope y'all had a Merry Christmas. I imagine this is probably coming out after Christmas and before the new year. And I we'll talk about politics later. Let's go into 2022 on a positive note, why don't we? Thank y'all so much and etc. for just giving me an awesome, like, it's been like a year and a half of this show, 31 episodes, and we're still living large. Y'all keep listening, tell your friends, rate and review the show, share it, do all that good stuff. Check me out at www.hoss.fun. Go to the Hoss Bossman YouTube channel, it has video essays and songs and stuff. Follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Twit, which is short for Twitch, at Hoss_Bossman. Check out the Breadsheet album, The Sounds of Breadsheet, at HossBossman.bandcamp.com. Support me on Patreon at patreon.com/Hoss_Bossman. And don't forget to flood the soul of all sentient beings you encounter with healing light. Please. Thank you. Who did I shout out at the beginning of the show? I forgot to say that we're going to fight. Remember that. We got to go to the K&K and fight whoever I shouted out. Oh, Deep Into History. Check out their podcast and check me out. Go to the KMAX, thekmacks.bandcamp.com. I think we got a Christmas song up there, but I didn't mess with that this year. Next year, we'll do like a remix or something. Anyway, here's a song. I haven't decided what it is yet, so here's a robot voice to tell you what the song is.
The song is Involvely from our debut album, Welcome Everybody.
And hope you had a Merry Christmas and have a wonderful new year from your boy Hoss. That's going to do it for me today. Hoss out. Mwah.
Finite chance to grow and broaden your perception. It's there for all to see.